The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Welcome to another episode of the Bookhouse Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Alterman. Today's guest is novelist and publicist, Andrea Stein. Andrea is the author of Typecast, which came out in 2002 and was named a BuzzFeed pick of the best main characters we've gotten to know in 2022, and a scary mommy pick of new books we can't wait to cozy up with this fall. She's also the author of the soon-to-be-released Dear Eliza. Welcome, Andrea. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Liz.
Well, I'd love to start by just talking about the premises of your novels, which are so interesting. Typecast follows a young woman who thinks her past is in her rear view until her ex decides to make a movie of their breakup, which I think is sort of everyone's worst nightmare, maybe, or, you know, how'd you come up with that? I love it.
So I heard a story about a guy who made a short film about his college girlfriend, and he was 30 at the time, so about 10 years, almost 10 years out of school. And my reaction to hearing that was, I wonder how this ex-girlfriend of his would feel if she knew that all these years later, she was still apparently on his mind. And I started thinking about, well, who is this woman and why did they break up? And when this happens, is she single? Is she married? Is she with someone? Is there unfinished business? And I began to evolve the idea of her. And of course, in turning it into a novel, it wasn't just a short film that no one saw. It turned into, it's a feature film on the big screen. And
a blockbuster, right?
Exactly. And the big piece of it that you don't find out until you get to almost the end of the book is, why did they break up?
Right.
Yes.
In one aspect, it's very flattering to think, okay, here's someone who's been thinking about me for almost a decade. But also what I loved is that this character, while she's reading about it in trade magazines and, you know, friends are texting her and emailing her, she doesn't really know how she's going to be portrayed. So that was really interesting, the sort of building suspense within this women's fiction.
Yeah, I mean that was certainly my hope in doing it. One book that always sticks into my head that I read years ago called Motherhood Made a Man Out of Me by Karen Carbo. A completely different story, but this concept that there is some tension between a husband and wife right after they had a new baby, and you don't know why. And this, even though it's a domestic story, it's building this, you keep turning pages. What happened between these two people? And that was something that I admired so much and hope that maybe I came a little bit close to with Typecast.
Oh, how interesting. I love Karen Carbo. I was very fortunate that I attended her retreat in France a few years ago. For any writers out there, I cannot say enough good things. Karen treats you like a queen. I was almost crying at the thought of having to leave. She's in this absolutely gorgeous village called Collioure. I'm probably mispronouncing it still even after two attempts. But it's just absolutely wonderful. And to hear about how she's made her life there, and her sense of humor is fantastic. So based on your recommendation, I'm going to go out and pick that up today at the Bookhouse.
Terrific.
Thank you. And then I'd love to talk about your next novel, Dear Eliza, which comes out October 8th and also has such an interesting premise. I was very fortunate in that you shared an early copy with me. And I loved how you explored grief and secrets that can really turn a family upside down. So I was hoping you could share with our listeners a little bit about that novel.
Sure. So Dear Eliza is about a young woman, Eliza Levenger. She has a great job at a nonprofit in New York City, great apartment, adorable, sort of no strings attached boyfriend. But it's taken her a while to get to this place in her life. She lost her mom when she was 16, and it, not surprisingly, created a very difficult situation for her, and she had a lot of issues. And when the book opens, her father has just died unexpectedly, and they've had a tricky relationship really since her mom passed. And what she wasn't expecting him to die, and what she really wasn't expecting was that her mom's sister would give her a letter that her mom had written before she died. She had cancer, so she knew she was dying. She wrote this letter to Eliza to be given to her after her father's death. And there's a secret in the letter that turns everything Eliza thought she knew about her family upside down.
Yes, it's so well done. And I mean, I think anyone would love to receive a letter, you know, from beyond the grave from a loved one. But this one certainly bears a message that no one would expect. And possibly you wouldn't necessarily want to know this secret, or it kind of throws you into a tailspin. And for Eliza, really compounding the grief that she's already experiencing. And you do such a wonderful job at really capturing just sort of both of the things that Eliza is grieving. And I just would love to know, as a writer, how challenging was it for you to write that way? I mean, I think all writing is emotionally draining, unless maybe you're writing the fun rom-com kind of scenes, but even that is taxing to get that just right. But would you say, was this draining or emotionally heavy for you as you were writing it?
It was. I mean, interestingly, I had written about the first 60 pages of this early in COVID. And then when I got the publishing deal for Typecast, which, as you mentioned, came out in 2022, I was focused a lot on the ramp up to that. And I ended up putting Dear Eliza aside. And when I picked it up again to work on it, in the interim, my own mom had passed away.
Thanks.
I lost my dad when I was 24. And so in a certain way, that grief was in the rear view. But my mother's death was very present for me when I was writing Dear Eliza. And I think, although my situation was completely different and in multitude of ways, I certainly did not have a letter, no big secret.
But that's probably for the best, right?
Yes. But I think a lot of the issues with grief are universal, or if anything, you know, I always hesitate to say, oh, I understand what you're going through, because can any of us really understand? But there is, you know, similarities in the human condition and shared experiences, and just sort of the whole general idea of when someone that you love dies, in many ways, you often idealize them, or you feel guilty for thinking about things that maybe weren't perfect about your relationship or about that person. And I think wrestling with all of that, you know, for me in the wake of my losses, and then thinking about in Eliza's circumstance, I mean, here, her mother in her head was perfect. I mean, she was 16 when her mom died. She'd been sick for a couple of years. They never had the challenging mother-daughter relationship because they didn't have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And now that she's found out this secret, it changes sort of how she thinks about her mother. But does she really want to have that anger? I mean, there are so many emotions that we have about the people that we love. I mean, it's not all hearts and roses. And then grief just complicates that. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And you, I think, I know I mentioned this to you previously, I think this would be such a wonderful book club pick because you have so many interesting relationships in here. And as we see so often in real life, Liza's dad remarries and, you know, she is certainly no Julie Andrews from The Sound of Music. You know, you don't always get that wonderful, and I know stepmom's big in the news right now, but could you talk a little bit about the inspiration for the woman who comes in and sort of, she doesn't necessarily try even really to take Eliza's mom's place because she's just not that warm of a character. But poor Eliza, you know, is really, that's another relationship that she's forced to grapple with, both in the aftermath of her mom, of losing her mom, and then at once the secret is revealed.
Right, right. I think a lot of what I was, I think I've never been in the situation at, you know, been a stepmother. But I think it's got to be such a tough role to step into, especially yeah. in this kind of situation. And I think you probably need to have a certain kind of openness to how it's going to go. And I don't think that Eliza's stepmom necessarily came in with the willingness to do that work, or, you know, once the work got hard, she just wasn't right. up for it. And I mean, her goal was the relationship with Eliza's dad. And as Eliza's brother points out to Eliza, you know, that she, Carol, the stepmom, was good for their dad. And yeah. Eliza's brother, who was older when their mom passed away. And of course, everybody, you know, every sibling has a different relationship with their parent. I think in his mind, it was more that, well, okay, dad's okay now. He's got someone. And he was grateful for that. But Eliza, being younger, I think was grappling in a different way. And I think that's probably part of what I was trying to show a little bit that, and I feel this way with my characters in typecast too, that nobody's all good or all bad. And so much of how you perceive them is sort of the energy that you put out and the way the two of you interact.
Absolutely. And you do that so beautifully. And then without spoiling anything, I liked that readers sort of learn that Carol, you know, at the end, we get to see a more human side of her, that maybe she had different expectations when she went into that family, you know, for her life and her future. And I thought you did that so nicely. So I really hope that book clubs will choose this, and because I think they could have a really lively discussion. I think everyone can sort of relate. And again, without giving too much away, Eliza's love interest, I thought was really just a fun thing for readers to explore and to see where that goes. And, you know, maybe just picking up on something that could be a childhood crush, and how do you sort of make that reconnection in real life without, you know, stepping on any toes?
Right, right. Well, thank you. I would love for book clubs to read Dear Eliza. And one of the most enjoyable experiences I had with typecast and continue to have are conversations with readers. And I've visited a lot of book clubs in person or via Zoom. And it's been really, really fascinating for me to hear how different readers react to different aspects of the stories. And I would love to be able to do the same with Dear Eliza.
Yes, I've done some too. And I think it's so much fun that you have a whole group of people who are willing to pretend that these are real people who have just lived inside your head.
Exactly.
Other people who are willing to talk about their struggles and their, you know, their sort of their quirks and who's the villain in their eyes. And it is, it's a lot of fun. And so sort of piggybacking on that, Andrew, you are a publicist by trade. And so I was hoping maybe you could share a little bit about how you've brought that background into your career as an author, how you sort of put that to work to get your books in front of readers. And then also, if you can share any tips for listeners who are writers or authors who are hoping to sort of, I mean, the market is so crowded now. People have so many opportunities with different avenues for publishing that it seems like you're kind of like, please pick me as an author. So I was hoping you could share your expertise on maybe what's worked for you and what might work for listeners who are about to put out a novel.
Sure. So I've been a book publicist since 1995. So that's whatever that is, almost 30 years. And the bulk of the projects that I've handled professionally are nonfiction, a lot of business books, and as well as health and an array of nonfiction, a little bit of fiction. But I've really been able to use a lot of what I've learned in promoting Typecast and Dear Eliza. I mean, the big lesson, which authors may or may not want to hear, well, I'm sure they don't want to hear, because when you're an author, you want to write a book and you want people to read it and you want to talk to readers and you don't necessarily want to do marketing.
Right.
But unfortunately, the reality these days is that an author really has to be their own champion. When I started doing this almost 30 years ago, it was basically traditional publishing. And there were, you know, the big five and a few small presses, and the number of books that were released was much, much smaller. And at the same time, there was way more media. There were, right. I mean, every major newspaper had a book review section.
Exactly.
I mean, there wasn't online. So now we have those avenues. But since then, with self-publishing, with hybrid publishing, there are, by some estimates, there are something like 4 million books that come out each year. And of course, all the books that used to, that came out previously are still out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. So, one of the, lessons that I've learned really is to be willing to put in that kind of work, to put myself out there. I mean, one advantage I think that I have is that because I'm so used to pitching the media, I can sort of pitch myself and just pretend I'm talking about someone else. Because I think that's the other thing that's hard for authors. We don't, you know, we tend to work, you know, in solitude. We're not necessarily comfortable with tooting our own horns. And we kind of have to. So with both Typecast and Dear Eliza, I targeted the media that I really would like to be in. I researched I spent a lot of time online looking at book blogs. I have an Instagram, Books Turning Brains _AJ Stein, which
Yeah, I was going to ask where our listeners can find you to only see your books, but to see, you know, what you're reading, which is a question I'll be asking
before
the end. I love to find out what other writers and authors are reading.
Yes. I've really sought to build a connection with people who are writing about books online, even before the books came out. And I try and, as much as possible, think about my books as, okay, here's a book on a shelf. Why would somebody want to read it? And not so much like, wow, I love this story personally, but like, let me think about the ways in which this could connect with readers and try and present it that way to Bookstagrammers, to, you know, the editor at People Magazine or whoever I'm reaching out to. This is why you should want to read it. Because I think oftentimes an author will just say, oh, I love this story, please read my book. But you need to have a hook this is a book that deals with grief and people can relate to for this reason, or, you know, this thriller that I've written, you know, is reminiscent of some of the stories in the news, whatever I'm just talking off the top of my head, but finding ways to kind of capture people's interest. And not just, here's my book.
Right. I think that's so smart. And one thing I was going to say too, I don't know if you do this, but I've listened to so many podcasts and so many authors giving their best tips. And I'm finding more and more that authors are saying, before I even sit down to write, I try to write a 1 to 2 sentence hook or pitch so that I've got that down and I kind of keep that in the forefront of my mind as I'm writing. And so I was wondering, I'm trying to do that with my next work, maybe just give myself some time. But I was wondering, I feel like yours can be so succinctly explained to a reader. And that I think that is so nice rather than, you know, sometimes you ask someone what it's about and they're kind of like, 20 minutes later are still giving you, whereas you can say it's about this woman in her 30s who, you know, broke up with her college boyfriend and boom, suddenly that story's on the big screen. And so I was wondering if that's something you do at the onset is sort of think about that 1 to 2 sentence hook.
You know, wouldn't that be smart of me? Right. I can't say that I exactly did, but I guess in a certain way that was, I didn't think about that. That's what I was doing. But yes, with Typecast, I went into it thinking, wow, what would happen if you found out your ex made a movie about you? So yeah. That is, I guess, the hook. And with my next book, which may or may not ever become a book, because right now it's just in the back of my brain, I kind of have an idea of a tagline for it, which I won't share because, I'm not sure that it's really going to be, you know, what it is, but I am thinking, I guess, a little bit more in terms of, you know, the tagline on the cover of the book now.
Right. Because I think, as you said, that really helps someone envision, okay, here's where it's going to sit in the market. Here's where it's going. Here are the type of readers it's going to attract. And so that makes a lot of sense when you're pitching it to media to sort of encapsulate it quickly.
Yes. Yes.
That's great. And then, so my next question was going to be, what's next for you? So it sounds like you're kind of plotting very loosely at the moment. I'm sure you're very busy prepping for Dear Eliza's launch.
Yes, I am busy with the launch. I've been plotting loosely since probably January of this year, and I would have thought I would have started writing by now. I find it really hard. I don't know about you, Liz, but I find it really hard to, you know, sit down and write those first sentences. Yeah. Once I'm in it, I can build up the momentum, but getting the characters and the story from my head onto the page, but it's the screen, mm-hmm. the computer screen. Initially I find really hard and I think I need to just bite the bullet and do it. So the basic concept that I'm thinking about is, a woman who, for various reasons, ends up having to move back to New York City, which was where she grew up. And when she does, one of the situations she ends up dealing with is reconnecting with an old friend who's getting married. And she discovers that her friend's fiance is someone that she herself has a history with.
Oh, how interesting.
Yes. Yes.
That sounds great. All of yours have such an interesting hook to them. But I have to say, I agree. I feel that starting a novel, for me, it's almost like when I go to clean my basement. It's like, if I know I start, I have to see it through and it's going to hang over my head until it's done. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's almost easier to not start because then you don't have that, you know, you're not waking up at 2 a.m. like, wait, what if this happened? Or when you hit those right. roadblocks and nothing's coming, you know, it's sometimes easier to just let it swim and stay in your brain where it's safe.
Yes, yes. But then on the other hand, you know, related to the whole marketing question, you sort of know as a writer that getting books out on a regular basis is definitely an advantage. Once your people know who you are, you don't want them to forget you.
So. Exactly. I know. And speaking of book clubs, it is so nice to be able to go to one. And when people are done and say, what's coming next? To have an answer to that rather than just kind of like, we'll see, exactly. You know, and then we have to contact them 7 years later, like, hey, remember me?
Right, exactly.
And then speaking of books, Andrea, I was wondering what you're reading now or what you've loved this summer that you would recommend to our listeners.
Absolutely. So I read a lot in, I had a week away and I got to read a lot while I was there. And the one book that I really, really loved, it was called The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. It's magical realism, I guess, would be the category. And I definitely so respect people who write things I could never write. I mean, I would never be that inventive. And I mean, this is, I love reading suspense too. I mean, I don't know, Liz, how you are able to plot what you plot. I am so amazingly impressed with what you write because my brain just doesn't work like that.
It's because I'm just avoiding cleaning my basement.
got it. That's the trick. Okay. I'll just, you know, tell my family, sorry, no more cleaning.
Right.
But wow. So the Husbands is about a woman who comes home from a bachelorette party, which I guess she's in England, so it's a hen party. And she's single, but when she walks into her flat, there is a man coming down from her basement who apparently is her husband.
Oh, wow.
And of course she freaks out and she's talking to, as she talks to her family members, everybody knows who he is. There are photographs of their wedding. So apparently she's in some alternate reality where she's married to him. So she's just adjusting to this when he goes back into the attic to get something. And when he comes back down, it's a different man. Her attic keeps spitting out these different husbands.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I had no guess where it was going. And as you know, as someone who reads a lot, I think we all often kind of guess, okay, this is headed in this direction. And I had no clue. And it was really terrific. Something else I really loved was Alyssa Friedland's newest book, Jackpot Summer.
Oh, okay. I've seen that on Instagram. I'll have to look for that one.
Yeah. I mean, one of the fun things for you and me and for patrons of the Bookhouse, being New Jerseyans, is that the book takes place in part in Westfield, New Jersey, in part on Long Beach Island. So it was fun having that setting. And it's a family story about three out of four siblings who go in together on a lottery ticket and win.
How funny. And I can only imagine how that goes.
Yeah, no. And it's, I mean, Alyssa does a great job with it. And I just started Abby Waxman's latest, which is called, I'm looking at it now, Krista Comes Out of Her Shell.
Oh.
So I'm about 30 pages in, and I love Abby Waxman.
Oh, that's great. Oh, it's a lot of good recommendations there. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. And then I guess I would love if you could share with readers where they can find you. And let's say they wanted to invite you to their book club. What's the best way to contact you?
So yes, that would be terrific. So my website is andreajstein.com. And you can get lots of information there about Typecast, about Dear Eliza, early reviews, that kind of thing. And there's a contact form. And you can also sign up for my newsletter, which I promise you only get one or maybe two emails a month. It's nothing crazy. Another good way to reach me is Instagram, where I am books.turning.brains_AJ Stein. And I pretty much post every day on Instagram or Bookstagram that corner of Instagram is known. And I post about all the books I'm reading, as well as updates about my books. And you can also message me through Instagram, but probably the best way is through my website, because I'm for sure going to see it and it won't end up in the, you know, suggested messages.
Right. Exactly. No, I love following you on Instagram. I mean, your stacks are always so colorful and creative, and I feel like I get great recommendations from you. So I highly recommend following Andrea on Instagram.
Thank you. Well, it's funny because when I discovered the Bookstagram corner of Instagram, which happened for me early in COVID, at one time, the most number of books that I owned that I hadn't yet read was maybe four. I now own 100 books that I haven't read.
Oh, how funny. And my list on Goodreads is huge because I'm just always seeing so many good books out there or books that intrigue me.
It's so true. And I guess there is that hashtag Bookstagram made me do it or whatever. And
yes, exactly.
And especially if I go to see a friend or an author in a bookstore, I end up picking up more than I ever intended to. So
yes.
Good for the bookstore, right?
But Definitely.
Oh, well, Andrea, thank you so much for chatting with me today. And I wish you all the best with Dear Eliza. I'm so excited for readers to meet Eliza and hopefully, you know, bring you into their book clubs and have a lively discussion about these great characters and all their complicated relationships.
Thank you so much, Liz. I really, really appreciate your inviting me. And this was just such a great conversation.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.